I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Well, hello and welcome to Bretton Cliff's Flea Circus. My name is Cliff.
Hello, I'm Brett. Howdy.
Hello, Brett. I can see a new feature behind you.
Can you really? It's that gothic mirror that you don't isn't it?
But I didn't say I don't like it. I found it very spooky when it was in the dark, but now it's in place, in situ.
Unfortunately, the subsidence hasn't been corrected as
yet. I mean, it's weird that there's that spooky Victorian child's face appearing in the mirror behind you, but, you know, whatever.
That came as a feature. It came as a feature. I said, have you got any cursed mirrors? And they said, well, we've got one.
Can you see the partition?
No, because it looks like a building. I can see it now.
Has it got
lights on it?
A little bit more context there.
A little bit more context now. Why have you got lights hanging down from it?
You know what, Brett? Ask the missus.
Because anything that you can put pillows or lights on are good things, aren't they? Just let's put pillows there. You don't need pillows there. Yeah. I'm putting pillows there. Yeah. Right?
Who's going to rest
the
head?
Don't lie on them pillows, right? Right? Because they're for sure.
Yeah.
What's that about?
Which one of the woodland creatures is going to rest their head on this tiny pillow today?
When I play on my game, I have a leaning pillow.
All okay, right. Is it with an elbow or the...
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, okay. I play my game on the bed, so I need something to rest my elbow.
Your game, the one game that you play, always the same?
It's just the one game. Of course it is.
Okay.
And
we all know it's Ludo.
It's Paperboy. Okay. And, so whenever I'm playing Paperboy, you know, delivering the papers and stuff like that, hoping to get onto that assault course bit at the end, which I obviously never do because I like run into a dog.
How many people do you think have ever got to the assault course or know of its existence?
I know. I think I've been close to it and I saw the start of it, but I don't think I've ever been on it. So, yeah, when I'm playing on paper, I need a leaning pillow. I mean, I need one. So she's got loads of pillows on the bed. She's given me leaning pillow away to me son, so I didn't have that. So I thought, I'll borrow one of these lovely pillows off the bed and lean on that. I got wrong, didn't I?
Did you? Leaning on
the good pillows. Yeah, that's from Next. What are you doing?
What's it for? What is its purpose?
Well, what is a pillow's purpose if you kind of lean on it?
I know,
or
that's what I'm saying, but what is this one's perceived purpose?
Sure. I'm looking at them now. They're on the bed. They're on the bed, just, you know, they're placed nicely. They look nice, but they've got no function looking nice.
Has anybody ever walked into a house and been impressed by a pillow?
Well, you'll have to ask, won't you? You'll have to ask prospective buyers, I would imagine.
I was on the fence, Steve. I'm not really sure about whether we should pay the £150,000 for this house or not. I know, Emma, but did you not see the array of pillows on the bed? You know, they won't come with the house, of course, because they belong to the current owner.
Exactly.
But just imagine we could also set up an array of pillows in the same way. I think it's worth the money.
I'll tell you what does sell a house on those house selling programs. Mm-hmm. A nice guitar. If you've got a nice guitar to stand in somewhere, come there. Oh, never been touched, but it's standing
just,
there.
Just leaning in a corner.
That's the house gone after that, isn't it? Definitely. Hey, Cliff, I was accused of eating the dog's ham this week.
Oh, yeah? What is the dog's ham?
Apparently, the dog has his own ham. Is it hidden away?
Is it the wafer thin ham?
It is quite wafer thing, yes. It looked rather succulent. So okay. I thought, you know, if it's in the fridge, it's mine, surely. But no, it's for the dog. He has a tablet with it. He's not going to have his tablet now.
What's his tablet for? I've spoiled
his medication. I don't know. Worms or something? I don't know, man. God.
Didn't even know he had ham.
I didn't even know he had a special place in the fridge where he kept his stuff. Eating the dog's ham. It was like the Gestapo after I'd ate the ham. Shocking. So that's what's happened to me this week. What's happened to you?
Not really. It's been quite quiet and uneventful. That's not much. Mm-hmm. That's not great content, is it? But not much.
It's truthful. It's truthful, though, isn't it?
But you know what? What listeners know they can get when they come to this podcast is the honest truth. Whether that's an eventful truth,
the bland truth,
the bland truth.
That's what they expect, and that's what they get.
I mean, I put it in our Twitter bio, to be honest.
It is. Brett and Cliff's Free Circus, the bland truth.
The bland truth. I don't think I've done much, no. Played football the other night. I'm back at football. Mm-hmm. That was good. Scored 2 in 2 weeks now, so I'm happy with that ratio.
It's a good ratio.
It was a decent goal as well. Although somebody today described it as a toe poke, and it was not. I would own the toe poke if I'd done that, but it was more of a swinging leg that just turned out all right.
A swinging leg toe poke. That's all.
No toe poke.
Well, why have you been accused? Must have looked a bit like a toe poke.
Well, maybe from where this fella was, the centre half, mm-hmm. it might have done, but he wasn't on top of it.
I was going to say I watched before, because obviously England lost, if anybody didn't know, and I had to console my tearful son, who was really upset and stuff like that. But there you go. But before that, I watched the 1966 World Cup.
Okay.
Right, that was on Channel 4, in mm-hmm. colour, no
I
less,
I saw
right?
that, yeah, yeah.
All right, it was very good. But the commentators were having the German keeper's life. Right? He was making saves and stuff like that. And he went, the commentator went, "You've made a right meal of that." Just because he died for the ball. Had his life. Didn't even do anything.
Were they really, really commentators?
There were. I didn't recognise the guy's voice. And the co-commentator was some Scottish guy. I don't even, it was probably a footballer in the 1950s or something.
I guess.
Have a clue. Yeah. So that was good. I did enjoy the match, but we lost.
I mean, well done for getting to the final. Nobody's done that for 55 years, you know, so mm-hmm. fair play. But at the end of the day, you know, we've got players who've won lots of stuff. I do think the difference is the manager, and Southgate's done a great job, and he's a great bloke. And, you know, all the things we were questioning his tactics earlier on, they all turned out all right. But I think the difference in the final is you had those two hard bastards at the back for Italy who know what to do to win a game, whether that's by dirty deeds or just by being good. And I think the same with Mancini. He's a winner, right? He's won leagues. He's won leagues as players, managers, and he knew what to do. Yeah. So I think that was the main difference. But, like, not taking anything away from the England lads, like,
nah.
They should have, you know,
football at the end
they
day,
could have
you know?
Easily won. I really, really felt for Jordan Pickford, who had a great tournament, and he did his job. If you save two penalties, you've got to think that you've done your bit and it's going to go through.
Yeah, I agree. But, he definitely did his job. I thought he was excellent pick, but
he was. Yeah,
and one game it went to his head a little bit. He lost his head a little bit in one of them. His kicking was off and stuff like that. But apart from that, I thought he was absolutely class, wonderful. But penalties again, you know. But they can happen. Penalties, yeah. Do you know what I mean?
So, all too predictable way to lose, but you know.
Yeah. Hey, I watched that Nobody film last night.
Oh, what do you think?
That you told us. I thought it was all right. It was cartoon violence.
Yeah, yeah. It's not going to like win any awards or out like that, but it's enjoyable. And I like Bob Odenkirk. He was good.
Yeah, he's good. Very, very thin, isn't he? Lost a lot of weight, that guy.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he looks like, instead of bulking up, he just looked like a bloke, like a normal dad, I suppose.
Yeah. Is it a wig, do you think, or has he had a hair transplant?
I think he's had a transplant. Yeah, I don't know. We could always ask him. He looked all right, didn't he?
Good. Yeah. No wrong with it, is there?
And also, Christopher Lloyd's appearance.
Yeah. Scuttling around with a shotgun.
A little bit over the top, but funny.
It was. It was just an enjoyable film. It was.
Yeah.
But yeah, like you say, it's not going to win an Oscar or anything like that. But it was still enjoyable.
That's, yeah, that's it was what good. Tell you what I've watched this week, which I found very enjoyable. There's a new documentary about, I don't know if you've heard them, Brett, a rock band called Kiss. That's K-I-S-S.
Ooh. No, I haven't heard of them. Okay. Is one dressed as a dog?
I think it's a cat, but yes.
What did you say his name was? Starscream or something. Star Sailor. Star Hat,
yes.
Star Hat.
No, the guitarist and singer, Paul Stanley's name was Star Child. That's what he was called.
Star Child,
yeah.
Right.
And Gene Simmons was the demon.
Right.
The drummer was the one that was dressed like a cat, but I don't know if he had a name because nobody cared. And
nobody cares about the drummer.
The guitarist is called Ace Frehley. And he had just like different face paint, didn't he? He had like silver.
He didn't stick to one.
No, but like it didn't really have a theme, I don't think.
Are you a fan of Kiss? Because I'm not a fan, really.
Well, I like a few of their songs, but after watching this documentary, I'm a bit more enamored with them because it's in two parts. It's very long. The first part is them from being kids up to what they classed themselves as selling out in the late 70s and early 80s, where they became like, massive.
Like big stadium gigs and stuff.
Yeah. But the bit about them like making the band and what they were like and all like what they were trying to do and how they ended up with a face paint and stuff and how they just went like that and thought this will be different and we'll get noticed. And how that all worked out was really, really fascinating. And that early stuff, that first couple of albums is like, it's just like rock and roll stuff. Before they went like stupid big, like hair metal and all of that in the 80s, it was good. I enjoyed it. Like I really, really enjoyed it. I would recommend it like to anybody who's a music fan, whether you think you like Kiss or not, even if you don't know a couple of songs and know of them, it's fun. It's really good.
Well, the best thing about Gene Simmons it was that he was married to that erotic lady
from Channel 5.
Yes.
I think that's
the best thing about him. Still waiting for that bit to come on, eh?
The minute he's been out with, he's been stepping out with Cher.
Has he? Diana Ross. Do you think he's an expert at the cunnilingus?
No, I think it's all for sure.
Do you?
Yeah, if you've got to show it off, Brett.
I think he might be quite good at it, given the length. That's all I'm saying.
I think he's obviously can, you know.
He could do it from a distance, couldn't he?
He might not suffer from the neck problems like the rest of us, but you know.
Yeah, or the ulcer under the tongue.
I wonder if he's ever crossed paths with Michael Douglas.
Yeah, I think they've swapped tips. I think so. Obviously, Michael Douglas didn't come out all right out of that, did he? He was the unfortunate one. He was don't know where he's been sticking his tongue.
Well, Catherine's
there. You go. Can't blame her for that, surely.
No, of course not.
Right. Are we going to talk about the thing we're going to talk about?
Yes, we're going to talk about Sherlock Holmes, the show, the 1984 or the 1980s version of Sherlock Holmes. Was it on ITV or BBC?
ITV, Granada TV, man.
Okay, yeah. So it's starring Jeremy Brett, and he was Sherlock Holmes from, I think, 1983 to 1995. Did he die in 1995? And he was Sherlock Holmes all the way up to then or something like that?
Yeah, certainly towards the end in ill health and stuff like that. He was he had to take pills and things like that because he was bipolar.
Okay.
And I think he had heart problems and stuff like that, which made him swell up. So by the end, he's kind of a little bit unrecognizable from the start. He's very big and sort of retaining water and stuff like that.
Okay.
But he's mint, and he's the best Sherlock Holmes ever. So.
Well, here's what I was going to say. I was going to say I've never seen or read any other Sherlock Holmes things other than this one episode. But then I realized I've seen the Guy Ritchie films, Robert Downey Jr.
Yeah. I really like them.
Yeah, I really like them. But I've never seen the Cumberbatch things. I've never seen any other films or read any of the books or short stories. So there's only really Robert Downey Jr. and does Basil the Great Mouse Detective count?
No, but Basil Rathbone does, and Peter Cushing, because Peter Cushing plays him in a Hammer film, which is really good.
Okay,
but you don't know about this, Cliff. But I have. Do you know how I have obsessions at certain times?
Yes.
Well, I had a Sherlock Holmes obsession for about 2 years.
Okay,
so I read everything. I read everything and I watched all these. I watched all the Jeremy Brett ones and the Hound of the Baskerville ones, the Hammer one and stuff like that. And it coincided with the time that Sullen got to Wembley. So, me and the wife went to Baker Street and we went to the museum and stuff.
Did you wind your way down it?
I put the hat on. Did I wind my way down it?
Yeah.
So, yeah. The museum's amazing, absolutely class.
Okay, cool.
So I was just reading all those books and stuff like that on the bus going to Wembley and coming back and stuff. So yeah, and this is the best version, I think, of Sherlock Holmes. This one's very sort of faithful to the books and stuff like that. Jeremy Brett was like obsessive about it being the same as the books and stuff. He would carry like a book around with him and things like that, you know, to make sure it was correct, and he would write the script and or make changes and stuff. So I love it, mate. I think it's amazing. And the one what we do is the Speckled Band, isn't it? That's the one that we do.
Yeah, the Speckled Band. Had you read this one before?
Yeah, I've read them all, I think. Read them all. So, I've a bit boastful. Most of them are short stories. I think there's only four novels.
Okay, this is
the Baskervilles one. Yeah, most of them are, I think there's like 56 short stories or something like that.
Okay.
So, but yeah, I mean, the thing about Sherlock Holmes, the greatest invention of a character ever, would you say? I think so.
What do you mean? What invention?
Well, you what?
What invention?
Say that again. You know, Conan Doyle's invented him. He's created him.
Okay.
He's a fictional character.
Oh, the greatest character ever invented.
Yeah.
More than Jesus.
Jesus was real?
I don't know. I mean, Marty McFly.
I think he's the greatest because most people think that Sherlock Holmes is real.
Yeah, that's
you know
true.
What I mean?
Right enough.
He's just like he's in there, isn't he? Even though we didn't read the books at school, which I don't know why we didn't, because we should have done.
So yeah, like I said, I've never really watched or read or anything with Sherlock Holmes, but
yeah,
you know the character, you feel like you know what he's about and what he does, even if you've never done any of those things. So you watch it with a certain knowledge of what it's going to be like and what it's going to be about.
Then I kind of rediscovered it as an adult, and I just became obsessed with it for 2 years. So yeah, I absolutely love it. Like, it's great. The production values and stuff are just magnificent for an ITV drama.
Yeah, it's good. It's good.
Wonderful.
I mean, it's a bit like Downton Abbey style thing, isn't it? I really, really enjoyed it. I know we've said it loads of times, but I could see myself like watching more of them. Again, I probably won't, but I could definitely could see myself going, oh, I wonder what the next one is or what the next one is.
Well, I will, because I've just bought the box set.
Oh, have you? All right.
TV. So there you go.
Well, this one's good. And I also had no idea who Jeremy Brett was. Like,
did you not?
No idea whatsoever.
Uh-huh.
But I thought he was excellent.
Yeah, he's class, isn't he?
Well, so over the top.
Well, Sherlock Holmes is eccentric, isn't he? He's eccentric in the books and stuff, and Jeremy Brett's exactly like that, but also energetic at the same time, obviously in the earlier ones before he got ill and stuff. And he was warned not to take the role and things like that because it would like consume him, and he sort of took it eventually. I think before that he was offered James Bond and turned that down for the same reason. But yeah, he said that he started having dreams about Sherlock Holmes and then they turned into nightmares. He was consumed by the role completely and stuff, and it affected his health.
Well,
but yeah, he's meant.
Yeah, he's excellent. Like, he's kind of exactly what I thought the character would be like, or expected him to be like. In fact, I thought he was a bit like a bit much, I suppose. And you've seen some people, he is very over the top character, but he's very like kind of in your face, and not you as a viewer, but the people he's talking to. In it, he's like jumping up and down, and he's shouting them. He's not very pleasant to them.
No,
I think he seems. I think people would say he was autistic. Now he's on the spectrum, probably.
Well, he's I mean, he doesn't particularly like people. I don't think. Yeah. I think that's his problem. Do you know what I mean? Also, he's a drug addict, so that doesn't help. That's another reason why I think he's like a fantastic character, especially for those times and stuff like that. Because he's flawed, isn't he? He's addicted to morphine and cocaine and stuff like that. Okay. So he's a flawed character. So he's like almost like the template for a kind of a hero, but a hero with flaws, because they're the ones that they're the ones that appeal to me anyway. Mm-hmm. I didn't like Superman. He's too
much
super.
Like you, a hero with flaws.
Thanks very much. And you.
Well...
Oh, you're more the Superman. I'll take it if I'm Sherlock Holmes and you're Superman.
I'm no hero, Brett. I'm just a normal man trying to do the right thing by people.
Trying to make his way in life, in this thing we call life. So, yes, this is the Speckled Band, isn't it? It's about a young woman who asks Sherlock Holmes for help when her ill-tempered stepfather moves her into the same room where sister died in very suspicious circumstances.
Yeah, it's a ridiculous story. Like, a really,
it is
really
not ridiculous.
Ridiculous story.
It is brilliant.
Brett, answer me this, Brett.
Yes, I will.
Why are the gypsies in there?
Well, I'll tell you why. The gypsies are there because this man, right, has been turned almost evil by his time in the tropics. So which is a very colonial way of looking at things,
it's
I think.
Quite a colonial subtext to this story, isn't there?
There is. So, yeah, there's a doctor, isn't there, called Dr. Grimsby Roylott.
There's a load of gypsies, but then there's what can only be described as a scruffy posh man appears and says, get off my land, and throws him in the river. And you find out this man, he's sympathetic with the gypsies who he's allowing to live on his land of his ancestral pile.
He does. But the gypsies are also there as a red herring, aren't they? Because
I know that, yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, he asked us to explain it, so I'm bloody doing it. So, like, the gypsies are there, like I say, as a red herring, because you think the gypsies have got to have something to do with this mystery.
I don't think the program does enough to make you think that, because they just appear a bit. Yeah, whatever. I don't think so.
Well, it's called It's called the Speckled Band.
Yeah.
It's called the Speckled Band, right? Mm-hmm. And we don't know what the Speckled Band is. No. And I think at one point Watson goes, maybe it's a speckled band, as in a band of people like the gypsies.
And I think, he says, or maybe like the scarf that might have spots on it, because gypsies wear scarves.
It's true of all gypsies. And we know this, don't we?
Mm-hmm. Even the boxer ones.
Even the boxer ones.
So, yeah, I mean, I think it's underplayed a bit in the end, that bit. But yes, they're obviously there to throw you off the scent of what really might be happening. And to be honest, Brett, what really is happening, I don't think anybody in a million years would have guessed. So I don't think you need the gypsies on that front, because it's not.
Sherlock Holmes guesses, doesn't he? Because he's the greatest detective of all time, better than Batman.
I think so. It's improbable that he guesses.
You see, the joy of Sherlock Holmes and the joy of the books and stuff like that is, generally, the motive is kind of revealed, or certainly is in this anyway. So the Dr. Roylott or whatever, he's come back from India, his wife's died, and he's gone to his ancestral home. And Sherlock and Watson find out that if the daughters marry, because he's got two daughters, if the daughters marry, he'll lose his wife's inheritance, and he'll be left with a pittance. So they've got the motive straight away. So you know the motive. The clever thing about the story is, how is he trying to knock them off? That's the clever thing.
Yeah.
Because one of the daughters has already succumbed to whatever the daughter's going to.
And the surviving one, and I don't like the surviving one.
Do you know why?
No, I don't like her. She's not very likable, I don't think.
And I like her.
And Armitage, the betrothed Armitage, like, it's what's the point in him? Where's he when all this is going on?
I think he makes these excuses and leaves at the start, doesn't he?
Yeah, because of Cantankerous stepfather.
Exactly.
Pleasant man to be around, isn't he? When he was having a small glass of whiskey with both hands.
Yeah, that bit was good.
And then he was feeding some parrots.
Yes, because that is the other bit that he's taken from the tropics, hasn't he?
Mm-hmm. The animals. He's literally taken a bunch of animals from the subcontinent and brought them back.
He lives with the gypsies. He lives with a cheetah and a baboon. So that's lovely. They roam the grounds freely, don't they?
They're very upset about the cheetah roaming the ground freely, aren't they?
Yeah. So anyway, Miss Stoner goes to Sherlock Holmes because her sister has died in strange circumstances. And as she's dying, she says, it was a speckled band. It was a speckled band. Uh-huh. And I think she's just either delirious or, you know, she's making it up, whatever. But Holmes doesn't.
The surviving sister says, she believes she died of fright or something. Mm-hmm. And she doesn't know what for, but she died of fright. So the survivors...
People believe that you could die of just fright, though, didn't they?
Mm-hmm.
They did.
Well, the surviving sister goes to see Holmes to tell her this. The reason that she's, now embroiled in it is because she goes into her bedroom and the dad has removed the wall... The bricks have come out of the wall, and he says, there's some work getting done. You have to go and stay in your sister's room. And she's like, oh, not my sister's room. You know I can't stay in there. And he's like, you're going to have to stay in there. What's wrong? It's a perfectly good room. And that's the main to make it up.
he's great, isn't he, the guy that plays
Grimsby? He's absolutely superb. Absolutely
Jeremy Kemp.
Yeah, and nice, he's have a look at some of the other things he's in.
Aye, I did. Uh-huh. He's in a few different things, isn't he? Aye. So you can see them if you want.
Well, I can't remember them. That's why I asked you. but he's got a great...
He's in Star Trek The Next Generation.
That's what I was going to say. He plays John Picard's dad, doesn't he?
Brother,
all right.
He plays his brother, aye. But also Miss Stoner as well. She's also in Star Trek The Next Generation.
Oh, is she?
So there's a few. Aye, uh-huh. I think she's Irish, or she plays an Irish woman in that or whatever.
Well,
but yeah.
So she has to go and stay in the sister's room where she hears a low whistling noise. A low whistling noise in the night, which keeps her awake. And that's why she has to go and see Mr. Holmes.
She also...
Sir?
Just Holmes. Just Holmes, little dim. Sherlock Holmes, no professor. But yeah, the our other sister has also said that she had been hearing the same things before her demise or whatever. Mm-hmm. So suddenly she's moved into this room where her sister was sort of living or whatever just before she was due to be married. And then she met her demise and stuff like that. So yeah, the same things are happening to her because... Lo and behold, she is also due to be married as well, isn't she? So there's the inheritance gone for this fella. So again, we know the motive. We know it's definitely him who's trying to kill these daughters. So
there's a bit that she says, oh, he's turned very unpleasant since he came back from India. He was in Calcutta, where he was a doctor, and then it all kind of ended, and he came home, and he bought the cheetah and the baboon.
Do you know why it ended? Because he beat his Indian servant to death with his bare hands. That's why. The tropics, you see, he's gone to India and
nobody
the tropics
can
have got
this,
in.
But I've got a very sad face on right now.
Well, that's what happened.
It doesn't say that in the show, does it?
Does, yeah, does. When they're on the train, when they're revealing the motive and the will that he'll lose the money, Watson goes to see his friend who was also in India or whatever,
this is the bit that I missed because you said I know who'll help us, so I'll go and ask me mate who was there. Yeah. And when did this happen? Because I watched it. I don't know. I missed this. But I was thinking, well, when are we going to get the answer to this?
Right. Well, there's a very famous drawing out of the books where they're both sitting on a train, where Holmes and Watson are sitting on a train, and it's almost a recreation of that drawing. Where they're both sitting on a train and they reveal the motive.
Okay.
So you missed that bit because that's brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, I heard the bit about the inheritance and all of that stuff, but all the way through I was thinking, well, when's Watson going to go and see his mate about what's up with this fella?
Yeah, I mean, it does happen off screen, so he's only talking about it. So, but yes, it definitely does happen.
Doesn't show you
before this. Before this happens, Cliff, is your favourite bit, isn't it? Because obviously the daughter goes to see Holmes, Miss Stoner. She leaves,
amazing.
She explains the whole story. And who should burst in after finding out she's gone to visit Holmes?
It's amazing. So I mean, he's suspicious, Roiland. So when she's gone to London to see Holmes, he's snooping through her stuff and sees the some correspondence that where somebody's suggesting she goes and sees Holmes. So he decides to go and have it out with Holmes himself. So Miss Stoner's in there.
Yeah.
She's there telling her our woes, and Holmes is very, very excited by the prospect of trying to sort this out. And she's like, well, I better go because I don't want to arouse any suspicion. And she leaves, and Watson's like, well, more breakfast for us then. And instantly, as soon as she walks out the door, he bursts in and he's furious with Holmes, a meddler. He calls him a meddler.
He does call him the meddler, yes. He doesn't like Holmes at all, does he?
No.
He bursts in on Watson, eating a rather burned kipper. I think that's what it was.
Very shriveled, crispy kipper, I would say.
Mrs. Hudson hasn't done well with that kipper.
And he's putting a lot of salt on it as well. Keen on Watson's breakfast at this point.
I'm glad the days have gone whereby a kipper was your breakfast. That's all
one
I can say.
Crispy kipper. <That's it. laughs> And also, I don't blame Miss Stoner for leaving when she's like, you must stay for breakfast. She probably had a little glimpse of the tray and was like, fuck that.
What you got? Kippers.
I'm on my way back to wherever it is that she's come from. But
well, that's why Holmes doesn't eat, you see, because he doesn't eat at all.
Does he not? So, okay.
Yeah, doesn't like eating.
So anyway, he bursts in and he's, you meddler, you stay away. And he says, you don't want to mess with me. I'm a very difficult man. If you mess with me, you don't know what I can do. Then he picks up a poker from the fireplace and bends it rather theatrically in front of Holmes's face as so to warn him about how strong he is. It is fantastic.
Which is the greatest thing. That used to happen all the time in like the 80s and stuff like that, didn't it? Like the, if there was like a bully or whatever, he'd show his test of strength by, I don't know, crushing a coke can
or snapping a pool cue or something. It's fantastic watching him bend.
It is.
But almost...
Because his face is beetroot, isn't it? All the way through.
He's puce.
He is puce.
But then almost as good as when he leaves.
Any fans of the film Santa Claus the Movie will like the word puce.
Then when he leaves the room after that, he basically just walks out after that, like, I've shown you, Holmes.
I've scared him then,
but then Holmes bends it back in the most comedy way I've ever seen. It's an absolute picture. It's superb. It's really, really good. Basically, they then go and have a look at the house and try and find out what's going on, don't they?
Yes, you know, while the doctor's away.
What do you think of Watson?
Well, yeah, I like Watson. I think he's good. I mean, this is the start of these programs and stuff like that, and they're almost kind of getting used to each other. And I think it's the same in the books and stuff like that.
Okay.
They are kind of getting used to it because Sherlock Holmes is not a fan of people particularly or whatever. But yeah, I think he's good. He does change. Watson does change into another actor and stuff like that. I think he was just replaced. I was trying to look for it. I couldn't find a reason as to why. But yeah, I think he's good. I mean, perfect double act, isn't it? Watson is like a man of action, really. He's a war hero and stuff like that. He's got his revolver, but you know, Sherlock Holmes is the clever one, isn't it? It's like, that's how it works. But yeah, I like, what do you think of Watson then?
I expected him to do a bit more in this, but then again, I missed a bit where he uncovers the truth about what's really going on. So,
yeah, he uncovers part of the truth, doesn't he? But the fact is that nobody's Sherlock Holmes. So these books and these stories are so clever. You're not gonna know what's happening. It's only Sherlock Holmes that knows. Do you know what I mean? So like you kind of guess what the outcome is.
Yeah.
So that's why it's clever, and that's why Sherlock Holmes is the person that I say the person. He's not a real person. I fell into that trap.
I thought it was good. I think the bit where they go to the house, I mean, it is a bit a bit far-fetched, I would say. But, you know, you're saying it's just because he's a genius, he worked it out. But the stake out
well,
the house...
Will you like us to try and explain? So he goes to the window, he finds that the shutters are closed, there's no way of getting in. So it's a locked room mystery, which is wonderful. So nobody can get in, nobody can get out, whatever, because the doors are locked. And then he sort of has a look inside the rooms. There's a bed that's attached to the floor so it can't be moved. There's a ventilator and there's a bell pull as well, which Watson pulls, but there's no bell. So why is it there?
Comes off.
And then he goes into the good doctor's room. He finds a safe, right? And on top of the safe is a saucer of milk. And he says, do you have a cat? Is there a cat in the safe?
No, we
don't have a cat. Just a cheetah and a baboon. That's all we have. And also they find a leash, a very small leash, a dog leash that's just tied at the end and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So by this time, because of obviously the fact that the man or the doctor keeps these exotic animals, he's put all this together in this wonderful way. And my favourite bit is... when they're waiting outside, they're waiting in a cottage and they're waiting for...
Yeah,
they're waiting for all this stuff to happen. It's so creepy. It's the best whispering I've ever heard in my life. I love the whispering. So that Miss Stoner leaves the sort of windows open. They creep into the room. She's not there. And they find out what Dr. Grimsby Roiland is doing to try and kill the daughters, which I'll let you explain. What is it? How is he trying to kill them?
Let's go back and do it justice. In the safe in his room is India's most poisonous snake. Not the one, but like the species.
It's a swamp adder.
A swamp adder, yeah. So that's in the safe in his room. I presume it likes milk. I'm a bit unsure about the milk. It doesn't really dry it. So I presume it's just known that snakes like milk. Seems weird. So this snake is in the safe, and on a nighttime, what he's done is trained the snake to go through the vents. We always love a good vent. So I'm quite happy that happened. And the snake then comes out of the other side into where the girl lady is sleeping.
Yep. Down the bell pull.
Yeah.
Yes. So it's just a rope
slithering down there, and it doesn't make a noise, and that's how it gets down. And then it goes around her neck, and it'll only take one little nip, and it'll be dead in seconds.
Yes.
That's right, isn't it? And then it goes back up the bell pull through the vent. Back into the other room where the doctor's got his little leash thing that he gives it a little whip with, and he leads it back into he lets it look at the milk, and then he puts it in the sink.
Yes, he does. He's trained the swamp adder with his whistle, so we hear the whistle and stuff like that. So he's trained it. Here's your milk. Here's your milk. And he's trained it to go through the vents down the rope. It may not bite the woman for, as Holmes says,
he can't guarantee
10 days. He can't guarantee it. So he's got to try this every night, every single night,
at some point,
until it happens.
What I quite like about it is that he's quite happy for it to be alive until she's just about to get married. Like, he could just kill her any time. But he's got to wait until it's a mere days before she's about to get married.
Yeah.
And then he's like, well, I better get rid of her.
In fantastic sort of Victorian style, he's a man of a profession and an alleviated profession as well, isn't he? So he wouldn't just resort to downright violence. There'd have to be a reason behind it or whatever. So he would only do it when he needs to.
You know what? Suspicion has arose because both girls have died or are about to die just before they get married. And I think
he has
a little bit clever if he just did it a different time.
If he had have just gone to Lestrade or whatever, who's like just a normal Scotland Yard detective, I don't think he would have worked out that the good doctor would have trained a snake to go through the vents down the road.
No, it's a ridiculous way of...
It's not ridiculous. I think it's absolutely class. I think it's amazing.
I was hoping for more of
it's clever as fuck. Well, we'd all like a bit of...
It was quite a fat baboon, wasn't it? Like, it had a big wobbly belly.
You see... I love all this gothic stuff in, because it is pretty gothic, this stuff. But like, the thing I hate is class. I hate class. I hate the class system in the United Kingdom and things like that. So it's weird that these stories appeal to us, because they're laden with that type of stuff. The hammer stuff is exactly the same. Do you know what I mean? So it's more the gothic kind of thing that appeals to us. I mean, there's a part where I just thought, oh, you stupid git. Where the doctor has scared off all the servants, so the two daughters have got to do the housework themselves, and they've turned grey because of the hard work.
Grey hair.
I mean, Jesus Christ.
Her hair was already white, and she was but 30 years old.
But 30 years old, exactly. Because they've had a bit of hard work, these two upper-class women. They've gone completely grey. But I don't know, I love these stories, man. I think it's like going back in time. It's like time travel and reading these stories.
Well, we haven't said what happens. Sherlock Holmes works out what's going on. So he gets the daughter.
Of course he does.
He gets the daughter out of the room, but the doctor doesn't know. So he's in there by candlelight, waiting for the adder to come down. And
don't fall asleep. Your very life may depend on it. Fantastic whisperer.
Yeah, really Jeremy good whisperer. Brett. And then what happens? He gets the snake right worked up, and by the time he gets back to the doctor's room, it's too head up just to go back in the safe, so it kills him instead.
Yeah.
And then you see the dead doctor with a snake around his neck. It's quite quite a sight, that bit.
It is quite a sight. It is. I mean, I love that. I mean, it's so long ago, these stories and stuff like that. I love the mystery of it. The fact that, you know, it's called the Speckled Band, and you think, what's a speckled band? You just think it's a band round your wrist or a band round your neck or whatever. Do you know what I mean? But no, the speckled band is a snake. Mm-hmm. And I just think that's, I just love it. Fantastic mystery. Yeah. Love Room. And I'd advise anybody to watch all of these Sherlock Holmes from the 80s, the Granada TV stuff. Read the books, because most of my short stories anyway, so just read them. They're amazing. And Jeremy Brett's the best.
Jeremy Brett is really, really good. It's like, he's like neurotic and excitable and a bit obtuse. It was just good. So, yeah, it was excellent. I enjoyed it a lot. Thank you for making me watch some Sherlock Holmes.
No problem. We don't have a quiz, do we? Because we couldn't be asked.
No, it's...
I don't know. Have you got a quiz?
It's not been a quiz week, really, for me.
It hasn't been a quiz week, has it? No. It hasn't been a quiz week for me either.
But what we can do is we can make up for that with an 8-minute-long song that we're going to play.
I must have listened to this song about 10 times, I think, Cliff. That's how much I think of it. And it's got the krautrock sort of influence for you, because you love that stuff, don't you?
Yeah, I think it's great. Just a droney, guitar-laden kind of effect. Just great. Just a slow, swampy groove, isn't it? Like, I love it.
It reminds me of, like, you know, Oasis albums and stuff like that, when there would be like a hidden song, like The Cage or something like that.
Nick DeSalvo, who's also in a band called Elder. This is his solo project called Delvin, and the song's called Delvin. And yeah, I think it's superb. I don't know how you found it.
I searched it out. That's what I did.
What did you do? What did you search?
I'm very happy that it's on. All I'd say to anybody listening and somebody thinking, 7 minutes? I can't give 7 minutes of my life up. Give 7 minutes of your life up to this song, because it's wonderful. Yeah, it's absolutely class.
Well, let's get it on.
Your day will be better. Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, well, thank you everyone for listening. I hope you enjoy Sherlock Holmes. You should go watch it. And the lovely Jeremy Brett Davidson, thank you so much for everything that you do for all of us. And this is Delving. Bye, Delving. Thank you. Goodbye. See you later.
Thanks. Bye.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.